Hi and welcome to Soundabout for May 2017. My name is Glenn Morrow. A big thanks to Steve Richardson, who has been hosting the show for the last couple of years. We really do appreciate all the work and effort that Steve has put in. He still will remain on Soundabout. You can hear him doing regular interviews. On this edition of Soundabout, track one, the opening announcements and this table of contents. Track two, our national president, John Simpson, joins me. We chat about the national convention coming up this year and also some constitutional changes. On track three, Emma Bennison, our executive officer, speaks to Steve Richardson. On track four, Lynn Davis is on to chat about the National Policy Council. She's speaking to Peter Greco. Vaughan Bennison is the host of our weekly radio show, New Horizons. The show recently celebrated 500 episodes. Steve Richardson catches up with him. On track six, Julie Sutherland is on to speak about the women's branch. She's chatting to Peter Greco. On track seven, Giselle Misnage is on to chat about the Digital Gap Initiative. She's chatting to Ricky Chaplin. Adam Morris runs a series of mailing lists for people who are blind or vision impaired. I have a conversation with him on track eight. On track nine, Martin Stewart is along to have a chat about the inaccessibility of AFL and NRL apps. Our diary dates are on track 10, and track 11 has contact details for Blind Citizens Australia. Here to chat about the convention for 2017, as well as some constitutional changes. Our National President, John Simpson, joins me now. Hi, John.
Hi, Glenn. And firstly, congratulations and thank you for taking up the role as host of Soundabout for us. It's greatly appreciated.
Certainly great to be here. Thank you so much for that, John. Let's chat about National Convention coming up in 2017. What's on the agenda?
Yeah, well, we've got a really good one coming up this year, and I'm hoping that it'll be the biggest and the best we've ever had. We're fortunate that Dr. Fred Schroeder, the president of the World Blind Union, has accepted our invitation to come out as our special guest, and we'll build a program around Fred's involvement and also have the involvement of Dr. Francis Gentle, who is the president of the International Council on Education for the Vision Impaired. So we'll have not one, but two world presidents at our convention in October.
Sounds fantastic. Now, I understand that we've finalised the dates and venue for a convention this year.
So the convention will run from Friday evening, the 13th of October, through to Sunday, the 15th. And it's being held in Melbourne. And in fact, it's being held out your way, Glenn. It's out at the Novotel in Springvale Road, Glen Waverley. A great venue out there. And one of the reasons that we've chosen the Novotel in Glen Waverley is because, firstly, they're offering us such a great deal. I expect that accommodation will be down around the $145 a night mark. But of course, the Novotel is part of a big complex of shops and cinemas and so forth. And I think that's really important because it'll mean that the convention is very family friendly. If people want to bring the family along, there'll be plenty for others to do or in the area. But also it means that people are not locked into the sort of hotel prices for restaurants and so on and so forth. I think there are about three or four restaurants within a 30-metre walk of the entrance of the hotel. So plenty of opportunity for people to manage the costs and so forth, which, of course, are very important to all of us.
John, I can vouch from personal experience that there are some fantastic restaurants and cafes around that area. How far down the track are we in terms of developing a program for convention?
There are two schools of thought within BCA. There are those of our members who want to see BCA's National Convention very much as a policy-centred event. And there are those people who think it's a great opportunity to have sessions that are more around, you know, personal development and recreation and a whole range of those sorts of things. So in putting a convention program together, of course, what we're trying very much to do is get that balance right. And I can assure all of our listeners that Lynn Davis, who is our Vice President and chairing the Convention Program Committee, and her team are working very hard to see that we get that mix of program elements right. The Novotel offers us the opportunity to have concurrent sessions, so that gives us more chance to sort of spread out what we're doing and what we're offering to people. And by having our national annual general meeting on the Friday evening, which we're planning this year, there'll be more time within the Saturday and Sunday programs for those important elements.
Now, John, just in case anyone missed it, the dates and venue for convention this year?
So the dates of the convention are Friday the 13th of October through to Sunday the 15th.
And that's at the Novotel in Springvale Road in Glen Waverley. John, do we know, it might be too early to tell, but do we know the registration cost yet?
No, we haven't worked out a final registration cost and so forth. As I say, the hotel accommodation comes in at around $145 per room per night, which is terrific in this day and age. Look, all I can say is that the convention registration, based on the figures that the hotel have given us for catering and so on and so forth, certainly shouldn't be substantially more than it was for the convention in Perth 2 years ago. And in fact, I'm hoping that we can come in under that figure.
Great. We'll look forward to finding out more about convention coming up in October this year. John, BCA's constitution is currently under review. Would you like to maybe tell us a little more about that?
So a big part of our work this year, Glenn, is looking at our structure, and we need to review our constitution for a couple of reasons. Firstly, because there are some elements that are now a little bit out of date in line with the corporations law and what we need to keep up to date with there. But more importantly, Blind Citizens Australia entered into a memorandum of understanding with Blind Citizens New South Wales earlier in the year. And the intention under that MOU is to see the two organisations merge. Now, to do that and to retain a structure in New South Wales that will allow us to apply for government funding and function effectively, we need to provide a corporate structure that will provide for our members what we might think of in the future as our New South Wales division to operate effectively. Now, that's not to say that we're doing away with our various branches, and we have a number of those, of course, in New South Wales and others, and branches, of course, in every state. But what we need to do is to create a structure that will accommodate that extra level within the organisation structure. As many of your listeners will know, BCA is founded on the principle that everyone is a member, firstly and foremost, of the national organisation, and then we come together in groups of branches and so on and so forth. And while we certainly want to retain that national membership, we also need to work with our legal advisors to put in place this formal structure. And of course, once we've got that sorted out, it'll allow us to look at opportunities to have similar formal structures in other states. So while the move in New South Wales was perhaps the catalyst to this, it's a structure that'll have application right across the country.
So, John, is it possible for people who are interested to have input into this process?
It certainly is. At the time that we're recording this, which is, of course, a little bit before our listeners are hearing it, we've pulled together a working party with representatives not only from the board but from people who are active in the various states, and we're doing some initial work and getting some legal advice, and then certainly there will be a process where we will make sure that we put out whatever the draft is for consultation to the members well ahead of the convention, and of course that's a process that will go on throughout the year. And then we have a requirement that we have to give our members 60 days notice of the annual general meeting and of changes or proposed changes of this sort. So there'll be plenty of opportunity, firstly in an informal consultation sense, and then through the actual notice for the constitutional changes for our members to review and pass their comments on the process.
And if people want to keep an eye on what's happening with this, they should watch BC News?
BC News will use probably by the time our next issue of Soundabout comes out, we'll be in a position to talk more definitely about the process, but we'll also use the New Horizons radio program, and we'll contact, obviously be making direct contact with members on top of that, both directly and through the branches.
So in terms of time duration for this process, at convention, what point do you hope to be at?
Well, our annual general meeting will be held in association with the convention. So by that stage, so that's by mid-October, we'll need to have the input from our members and have a final position that we're putting to the membership for resolution.
So obviously, John, if people want more information about this constitutional review and also a national convention coming up this year, they can find out from more information from the New Horizons radio show, from BC News, from the website. But also, can they get in contact with yourself?
I'm always willing to hear from members with their questions and comments and so forth. The BCA list gives us a great opportunity for those people who are online users, but I'm also very happy to take telephone calls and to speak to people about these changes and about any other matter relating to BCA.
We've been chatting to Blind Citizens Australia President John Simpson. John, thank you very much for joining us on Soundabout.
It's great to be back with you.
Hi, this is Steve Richardson with you once again. Joining me now is the Executive Officer of Blind Citizens Australia, Emma Bennison. How are you, Emma?
I'm very well, thanks, Steve. And you?
Yeah, I'm well too. So you've been in the job for just over a month. How are you finding it so far?
I'm really enjoying it so far, Steve. It's certainly been a busy start. It's been an interesting introduction to the organisation, having previously served as BCA President, as many of the listeners will know. It's been interesting to see the organisation from an operational perspective, and I'm really enjoying working with the team. We've got an absolutely fantastic team of staff in the office. I'm really enjoying getting to understand the organisation from the other side, so to speak, and a hugely busy start, lots and lots of priorities and things to get underway, and that just makes me very excited and energised, so I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, and I suppose the role of EO is quite different from that of the president. It's more of an operational and day-to-day type role, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, while obviously during my time as president, CEOs came and went, shall we say, and so I did get probably more of an insight into the operations of the organisation than a president normally would. But even so, it's very different actually working in the office and really getting to know and work with the staff and talk to members on a day-to-day basis. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
So what are the main areas of focus for BCA at the moment from your perspective?
Well, at the moment, in terms of advocacy, I guess the main areas of focus continue to be the touchscreen ATMs and FPOS terminals, such as the Albert device. We continue to do some very targeted advocacy in relation to that. Mm. We're representing some complainants at the moment in relation to the Albert device, and that's ongoing. So there's not a huge amount I can say about it because the conciliation process is confidential, of course. But what I can say is that we are working to get a resolution that we hope will involve the provision of a hardware keypad, and that will alleviate the need for people who are blind or vision impaired to undertake training just to enter a PIN, because sighted people are not expected to do that. So we don't believe that that's a reasonable expectation of people who are blind or vision impaired. Mm. The other area, of course, is audio description. We continue to work on that. And there was just an announcement recently around the development of a working party, or the establishment of a working party, which is a joint initiative between Minister Jane Prentice and Minister Mitch Fifield to look at providing sustainable options for implementation of audio description on Australian television. So it goes beyond just the ABC and looking at trying to get broadcasters to buy in to doing this voluntarily, but also with the potential for mandated audio description requirements in the background as well. So the terms of reference have just been released, and we are confident that we will have an opportunity to be involved in that working party. We certainly hope so. We've also just had the first meeting of our new National Policy Council. Lynn Davis is chairing that committee, and that was a really exciting opportunity to start to look at the current BCA policies and look at where the gaps are and what the priorities should be, because obviously we have limited capacity and limited resources and there's only so much that we can work on at any given time. So it's really good to start to get some consultation with members, with those representatives happening around what the policy priorities should be. And in terms of what I have been doing in the office to sort of work to improve some of the systems and processes, as many of you will know, I am actually based in Hobart, but I'm working in Melbourne for half the week, Monday through Wednesday, and then spending the rest of the time in Hobart. But the eventual intention of the board is that I'll be able to work remotely for the majority of the time, but also that in the longer term, we will hopefully be able to have a number of staff working remotely, which will mean that we'll have a much more national profile in terms of our staffing. And so I have been starting to look at some of the areas where we need to modify our systems to make that more doable. I can actually work from home at the moment, but there are some things that we can do to make it faster and make it more efficient. So I've been looking at some of the IT systems and the telephone systems, and also looking at how we can use our telephone system to best effect to get information out to members, because we know that the telephone remains the most effective communication method for most of our members. So yeah, lots of exciting challenges, and I'm really excited about what's ahead.
I think the point you make about technology is an important one too, because in this day and age, reliable internet-based technology means that it doesn't matter where your staff are. You can have a secretary in Brisbane, a treasurer in Hobart, a president in Melbourne, and they can all work well together without necessarily having to always be in the same place.
That's exactly right. And of course, you'll be aware, and it's been an ongoing discussion for us about the potential merger with Blind Citizens New South Wales and the possibility of being able to create some other state-based entities. If we go down that path, then it will become even more essential that we have the capacity and the flexibility to be able to have remote working arrangements in place.
Before, you alluded to the fact that your role has recently had a fairly high turnover rate. I have had the privilege of interviewing a lot of the people that have moved into that role, and I'm going to ask you now the same question I ask all of them. Firstly, what do you want to bring to the role, and how do you see the organisation looking after you have left?
That's a great question. So initially, my answer to that goes to the heart of your question and the fact that there have been a number of management roles within BCA over recent years. So the first thing I want to bring to BCA is stability. I really want to be around for quite some time, and I really want to be able to offer staff and members some certainty that I'm going to be around for the long haul. So, you know, I've been kind of joking with people that barring being hit by a bus or some other catastrophe, I have no intention of going anywhere. So that's the first thing. But then I also want to make sure that BCA is able to build on some of the work that we've started to do over the past couple of years and improve its communication and engagement with members. I still think we've got a good amount of work to do there. I think we've come some way in that direction, but I think there's more work to be done, and I'm very, very committed to doing it. And I'm very committed to engaging, and I know that the board is also, in a whole range of different ways, because we know that, for example, some people prefer to use the telephone, other people are hugely into social media and everything in between. So we really do need to take the time to build those mechanisms so that they work for people. And I guess the other thing I want to do is make sure that BCA has sustainable funding, can actually grow and develop into the future, has good leadership succession strategies in place so that when the time comes for me to move on and when we have new board positions and so forth, that there are people who have the capacity, but also just as importantly, the confidence to take on those positions of leadership. And I want the organisation to be one which people are proud and honoured to lead. I think that's hugely important. And I think we need to rebuild BCA's reputation as the primary representative body of people who are blind or vision impaired in Australia. So that's what I want to see.
Emma, certainly you have the right attitude to be in the position. I think you are very passionate about BCA. You always have been. And I wish you all the very best of success in your role going forward.
Thanks very much, Steve. And also, I just want to thank you for the work that you do and all the presenters on Soundabout, but particularly yourself for having taken on the coordination role in recent years. I know it's a massive undertaking. So thank you very much for what you do as well.
I've been speaking with Emma Bennison, who is the new Executive Officer of Blind Citizens Australia.
Peter Greco with you on Soundabout, and with us is Lynn Davis. Lynn is the President, or in fact the Chair of the NPC. Lynn, welcome and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Peter. It's nice to be talking to you.
The NPC, for those that mightn't be aware, what is it?
The National Policy Council, and it replaces the National Policy and Development Council, the NPDC, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard of over the last 20 years, probably.
Who's on the NPC? Who's on there now?
Okay, well, as you've already said, I'm chairing it, and there is one other board appointment, and that's Fiona Woods, who some people would remember from some time back when Fiona was on the board in the late 1990s, I think, and has recently rejoined the board. Then in addition to that, we have Rowena Dowling representing Queensland, Crystal Malcolm from New South Wales, Justin Simpson from the ACT, and Marie Harris from Victoria, Doug McGinn from Tasmania, Jodie Holbach from South Australia, Greg Madsen from Western Australia, and also Martin Stewart, who is a co-opted member.
You have done very well to have remembered all those. Congratulations on that.
I know, I've been practicing. Yeah, and it's quite a big committee, as you no doubt gathered.
Now, I think you met with the board in February, is that right?
Well, the board had a two-day face-to-face meeting in Sydney in February, and as part of that meeting, I think for 2 hours, the members of the National Policy Council were brought in by telephone to meet the board and to have a bit of an introduction to the work of the committee, the background, and so on. So, yeah, it was a bit of background briefing before we actually have our first business meeting. Yeah.
Now, when people get the Soundabout audio magazine, you would have already had a meeting, but you haven't had it as we speak.
That's true. The first real meeting, if you like, is next week at the beginning of April.
Yep.
And yes, I gather Soundabout doesn't go out till later in the month.
That's right. So what will the NPC do? What are some of its, I guess, aims and objectives? What's it there for?
Right. Okay. Well, the old NPDC had included in its remit not only policy matters, but also some development, like organisational development. But in fact, I think probably that second part, the development part, didn't really get addressed in the life of the NPDC. So there was a review of the NPDC, which I think handed down a list of recommendations last year, and one of the recommendations was to split those two functions and to have a National Policy Council which would focus on organisational policy, public policy. So if like policy statements about matters of particular concern to people who are blind or vision impaired. So that will be the focus of the National Policy Council, to review our existing policies, of which there are quite a few, and then to look at gaps in the suite of policies that we already have, and make some decisions about, you know, where there are gaps, and the board will also do that. So develop policies in areas where there are gaps. And then the other The other thing it will do is respond to any policy development jobs which are given to it by the board. So we'll start modestly, I think, until, you know, people get into their stride. And we'll probably begin with starting a review of existing policies and then move on to identifying gaps and developing some new policy statements.
Well, it sounds like a very formidable committee. We know many of the members on it. So,
yeah,
and you chairing it, I'm sure, will be very successful. Thank you for speaking to us, Lynn.
It's been a pleasure, Peter, and I'm sure it's going to work really well. As you said, there are lots of names there that we've heard of many times before, and there are some new names as well.
So, thank you, Lynn.
Yeah. Okay, bye-bye.
Lynn Davis there. Lynn is the chair of the NPC of Blind Citizens Australia, speaking to us on Soundabout.
Hi, this is Steve Richardson for Soundabout, and in just a moment I'll be speaking with Vaughan Bennison, who is the presenter of the weekly Blind Citizens Australia radio program New Horizons, which has now reached the milestone of 500 episodes. Over the years, New Horizons has been rebranded on a number of occasions. So before we join Vaughan, let's take a trip down memory lane and visit some of its previous incarnations.
This program is presented by the National Federation of Blind Citizens of Australia. We, the NFBCA, are visually handicapped people of Australia, speaking for ourselves and acting for our mutual benefit.
I'm Neville Kerr, and a very warm welcome to this week's program, particularly if you're a new listener. This program is heard on a weekly basis on various RPH stations around Australia. A few weeks ago, I featured some recordings that we made at our 1987 annual convention back in June.
On the RPH network and community stations across Australia, it's time for Horizons from the National Federation of Blind Citizens of Australia.
So Vaughan, welcome. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me on the program.
For those who don't know you, and I don't think there'd be too many in the blind community who listen to the RPH network or are involved with BCA who don't, but just tell us a bit about who you are.
I am living in Tasmania and I'm married with two children. And I am the manager of Print Radio Tasmania, which is the RPH station in Hobart. We have three transmitters actually right across Tasmania. I'm also the chair of RPH Australia, which is the peak body for the RPH network. And I do lots of other interesting things with audio. And I'm very much into collecting audio equipment and vintage audio stuff. And I do New Horizons, I suppose, as a bit of a hobby.
Another bit of a hobby. I know you like to collect clocks as well. I know that's a bit of a thing you enjoy doing.
Yeah, I've got a couple of clocks and I'm looking to get more. But my audio collection's sort of taken over that a little bit at the moment.
So moving on to New Horizons, I know you haven't done the whole 500 of them, but at what number did you start?
I took over in the late 420s, but I actually did one earlier than that, and I think it was episode 424, which was my first ever New Horizons, when I talked about the winner of the David Blyth Award. And the winner of the David Blyth Award at the convention in Perth in 2015 was John Shute, the Braille music transcriber. But I took over officially around about episode 428 or 429, and my first program was about moving interstate, and I spoke to the outgoing New Horizons presenter, Ricky Chaplin, about the fact that he'd recently moved to Melbourne to take up a formal position with Blind Citizens Australia as a policy and advocacy officer.
So over the 2 years or so that you've been doing the program, what are some of the things that you've covered?
One of the things I thought was really important with the program, Steve, was to, well, I sort of felt that it had lost its way in a way. It's a weekly program from Blind Citizens Australia, and I had sort of felt that for some years it hadn't focused very much on Blind Citizens Australia. It had focused on what a lot of other people were doing and the outside blind community. And I think that's really important. But I think it's important for blind and vision impaired people to have an understanding of what Blind Citizens Australia as their peak body is up to and how they run the organisation, because it's really important for any organisation, as you know, Steve, to do succession planning. So one of the things that I focused on very early was board meetings of BCA and what the outcomes of those meetings were. And at the time, there were some changes afoot because Emma Bennison had recently taken over as president and John Simpson became vice president. And John, of course, has a very long history in radio, having been the executive officer of RPH. So one of the first programs I did was talking to John about his involvement as vice president. I've talked about the wayfinding standard, which had been released early in 2016. We have, of course, used some material from the 2015 convention and other programs that I've been to. And we've also featured talks from well-known blind community members, people like Graham Innes. We talked to him about his book. We've spoken to Emma Bennison a number of times in her capacity as president of BCA, and Leah Van Poppel, of course, when she was the CEO of BCA. We heard a feature presentation from Bashir Ibrahim, who I understand has now moved on, but at that time was working with Guide Dogs Queensland. And he told us about the Braille Trail in the Queen Street Mall and the talking signs that had been associated with the long-running Braille Trail. One of my favourite interviews, I think, and one that I've featured twice, was an interview I did with a chap by the name of Ivan Malloy, who ran for some years the Blind Citizens Australia Overseas and Cultural Branch, yes. I think that's what it was called. Mm-hmm. And that was closed in March 2016, and I did a feature interview with him about that. And then in the program after that, I spoke with David Blythe, who gave us another side of the view of that branch. And I have to say, Steve, that talking with Ivan was probably one of the highlights of my radio career. He was just a fabulous person to interview, and he really made the program come to life. And I also spoke to the chap who won the competition for the new theme, because we've had a theme that ran all the way through until about episode 435, and we decided it was time for a change. So the person who won the competition was featured on one of the programs, and his New Horizons theme's been used ever since.
We're heading for New Horizons, it's up to you and me. Shine a guiding light and lead the way. United by our cause, we have the power to pursue what we believe. We'll achieve the realization of our dreams.
Speaking of themes, we heard earlier some of the ways in which the program was produced in the past. Certainly a very long history, much longer than just New Horizons.
It was known as the NFBCA program up until sometime around the late 90s when it became Horizons. And then when Neville Kerr, owing to illness, had to give up the program, Neville did something like 1,248 Horizons episodes, which is a phenomenal effort. I mean, he didn't do every one of those episodes, It's fair to say. He did take a few breaks, but not a hell of a lot. He probably did 1,230 of those 1,240-odd
episodes. Either way you look at it, it's a mammoth effort.
It was huge. Since 1984 up until, I'm thinking, 2007, Neville was the presenter of Horizons. And then when he finished up, it fell to Robin Gale, who did it for a while. And there have been a few different presenters who've been involved. Scott McInnes, he did it for some years. And Ricky Chaplin, of course, who did it for a couple of years. I hope I haven't forgotten anybody, and my apologies to anyone if I have. But it did go through a period before Ricky took it over of significant change. Scott moved on to other things, and it was sort of done by a hodgepodge of different people for a few months until Ricky took it over.
Where do you see it going in the future? Firstly, I guess, do you see yourself continuing to do it for a little while yet? And secondly, is there any ambition you have for the program and where you're taking it under your leadership?
I think there's a couple of sides to that question, Steve. I'm happy to continue to do the program in the future. I don't know whether I'd say that I can see myself doing another 500, but certainly I'm not opposed to the idea. But I do think one of the things that's really important to me is succession planning, and I want to make sure that there are some new people coming behind me who could take over the program. So one of the things I'd like to do is to upskill some younger people who've got some interest in journalism. some interest, particularly in radio, because that's something that's very dear to my heart. And I'd like to see perhaps over the next couple of years that maybe there could be a bit of a presenter roster for New Horizons, maybe two or three people doing it on a regular basis, or even a team effort. And I think it would be nice to get some young women involved as well, because apart from Robin, I think New Horizons has always been produced and presented by men, and I think it would be nice to have a different take on things. Being the weekly program from Blind Citizens Australia, I think it's important for us to focus on what BCA is doing and where BCA is headed, because BCA itself has been undergoing a significant period of change over the last few years. And it's important to highlight that and highlight what that means to the community. And of course, New Horizons being out on the podcast as well as on the RPH network and community stations around Australia means that it's uniquely positioned to reach parts of the community that no other form of communication is going to reach, because it can be heard by any person living in Australia who is within range of a radio transmitter, and that's probably most of the population. So I think it's important to acknowledge that, and I think that it holds a unique position in BCA's communication and outreach facility.
It doesn't just reach members of BCA either, does it? It's a really good way of getting the message of Blind Citizens Australia to a wider audience.
And that holds true for whether or not you're talking about blind people and sighted people, because it's important for sighted people to understand the issues that face blind and vision impaired people. And it's equally important for people who are blind or vision impaired, regardless of their membership status of BCA, to know what their peak body is doing and to know what other blind people and other organisations in the community are doing. Because, for example, if I feature something on New Horizons that's specifically about Tasmania, which is where I'm living, it doesn't mean that people in Sydney or Brisbane can't listen to it, because somebody in Sydney or Brisbane might say, hey, they're doing that in Hobart, how about we do it? And then I can talk to them and say, hey, this came out of something that you heard on New Horizons. Well done for taking up the baton and running with it. Radio is uniquely positioned to reach a part of the audience in a way that can't be done in any other. You can hear directly from a person and you can feature that person anywhere in the country. And I think that's one of the things that excites me about radio.
Vaughan, thanks for the chat. It's been great to talk a little bit about New Horizons and a very successful program 500.
Thanks, Stephen. It's been great to be with you again.
I've been speaking with Vaughan Bennison, the presenter of New Horizons.
Hope you're enjoying Soundabout. Peter Greco with you. And with us is Julie Sutherland, who's going to tell us about a recent phone meeting from the Women's Branch. Julie, how are you?
Oh, I'm well, thank you, Peter.
Now, you were very instrumental in the last Women's Talk, the Blind Citizens Women's Branch phone hookup. Tell us how it went.
Yes, it was a very successful event. We had about 10 people come, 10 women from the Women's Branch come from across Australia to discuss hobbies, and we thought that given a new year that people would like to start up new hobbies.
So it was people talking about hobbies or maybe people expressing an interest in a new hobby? How did that sort of pan out?
It was a bit of both. People spoke about existing hobbies and wanting to start up new hobbies, and also, where that was applicable, how some people had to change their hobbies due to limiting sight.
Okay, so they might have done it in the past and now have lost their sight, and how they've adapted to that when it comes to their hobbies.
That's right.
Yeah. What about some of the hobbies that were talked about? You know, any sort of unusual ones, or was it, you know, was there a common theme?
Look, a lot of the musical activities were discussed, and cooking and creative writing and travelling. So it was quite a diverse range of, and crafts too.
one of the things that can be very limiting, in a sense, even very isolating for people who are blind or vision impaired, is the lack of access or the lack of access to transport. So we talk about hobbies that can be done from home, or also people who might go out to enjoy their hobby.
It was a mixture of either using community centres or home-based hobbies, yes.
Was there any discussion about people who might be interested in a hobby but perhaps for whatever reason weren't welcomed or had a little bit of challenge to break down barriers to get into different clubs or groups, etc.?
Yes, there was a bit of that discussion. But I think what also has been highlighted is with how community groups are embracing blind and vision impaired people a lot more than what they once were.
Okay, that's good that those barriers are being broken down. What about the age group of the ladies involved? Was it fairly wide ranging?
From about mid-30s to early 70s.
Oh, that's very good, isn't it? And I guess different age groups may be interested in different hobbies?
Yes, and also whether children and grandchildren were part of it too.
Yeah.
We also discussed new cooking equipment and things as well that people might, if entertaining is a hobby.
Okay. Julie, what about from this? Will there be a list of hobbies? I know you got the Women Talk email list, which is very active and people contribute to. If people who weren't able to get to the conference want to find out about some of the hobbies that were discussed, can people do that? Or?
Yes, I think we will be putting together a list of the hobbies, but I'm not sure how that's going to happen.
Yeah, I know late last year one of the Women's Talk phone hookups was about small businesses, and there was a list of the various small businesses that various people were running, and sort of people were being encouraged to use them. So hopefully maybe something similar can be done to that as far as spreading the word about the different hobbies. So in summary, a very worthwhile project?
I think it's been, having these telelinks have been very worthwhile, because we don't get to come together as a branch except for national convention.
And there'll be another one later on this year. Julie, well done. Thank you for that little snapshot.
Thank you, Peter.
That's Sir Julie Sutherland from the National Women's Branch speaking to us on Soundabout.
Hi, this is Ricky Chaplin with Soundabout. Well, it's been really important over the last few years in particular, as we've seen such changes in the technology that's emerging, that we develop some standards around how that technology works for people who are blind and vision impaired and for people who have disabilities more generally. And somebody who's been very heavily involved in trying to develop those standards and to get legislation developed is Giselle Menage from Digital Gap Initiative. Giselle, welcome to Soundabout.
Hello, Vicky. How are you?
Well, thank you for joining me on Soundabout. And maybe just to start off with, you could give us a bit of history in terms of how you decided to get the Digital Gap Initiative going.
Okay, well, about 3 years ago, I was involved in a case of a web accessibility complaint against the Coles online website over the accessibility of their website. And when it came to the crunch, I realized that one of the obstacles was that there were no standards and there was no legislation. Obviously, there was the Disability Discrimination Act, but there were no specific standards or references to digital accessibility under the Act that made it possible, if a case, for example, went to court, to have a decision on how the website would be fixed or that it should be fixed one way or the other. I happened to ask a young lawyer, why is it so that we've got standards for access to the physical environment, like you've got ramps in buildings and lifts and all kinds of disability parking. Why is it that they're not there for digital accessibility? So she explained about what a soft law and hard law. So the standards for access to the physical environment had been legislated in 2011, but no such developments had taken place around digital access. And that's when I decided we have to do something about this. We live in the digital age. And it doesn't make sense. Like, it simply didn't make sense that there were no legislation, no standards, no national policies on digital access at all.
Yes, and of course, a good example that we're seeing right now with that at the moment is the emerging technology in the banking sector. So could you tell us a bit about some of the work you've been doing in that area in recent times?
Yeah, sure. So we didn't go for the banking sector in particular. It fell into our lap, so to speak. So we had a phone call regarding this young woman who had been to a doctor's office and had encountered this touchscreen FBOS machine called Albert. And it was the first we'd heard of it. And it revealed, again, a development in banking services where devices that we use every day, like FPOS machines and ATMs, were being transformed by digital technology and becoming touch screens. But it appeared that there was no accessibility built into those devices. And again, coming back to the fact that there were no standards around those, the standards for accessible banking were developed in 2002, before the digital age had come full circle and encroached in everything. And so even though it makes reference to digital technology in those 2002 standards, they're not really explicit. So yes, we started campaigning around making the Albert accessible, and ever since then it has become so much part of our signature campaign. We're now investigating the development of touchscreen ATMs, and again, it appears that accessibility features are in there, but they're not developed to a stage where you can say that they're usable or workable. And banking is such, I guess it's such an everyday, it's managing your finance independently. Financial management is such a in our society especially, it's such an important part of everyday life.
Yes, and of course, even if there are accessibility measures built in, that doesn't mean to say that they're going to be the same right across the sector at the moment. And of course, that applies to any sector, whether it be household goods, banking, whatever the case may be. So what we're really looking for is consistency in design right across the range of devices available.
Exactly, Ricky. And this is standardization. So, for example, if we go back to the Albert, we won't go into the fact that, you know, there are issues with the way that the accessibility of Albert is activated in the first place. But even if it would be activated by the user, there are issues about how you work it out when you're in a shopping environment. But it is the biggest issue is that there are particular gestures that you use on the Albert, which have been developed by the manufacturers of the Albert device. These would be different on a different POS device developed by another bank. And we said that standardization, we see it already in mobile phones, the iOS devices such as Apple phones, iPhones, and the Android phones have got different gestures for doing the same thing. And so then it becomes really complicated for a person that's trying to learn to use a touchscreen without sight, especially, or an older person that is new to the technology, or a person who's got dexterity issue, to suddenly have to manage all these different things. Whereas, for example, with the dot on the 5, if we go back to the tactile keypad of your phone or your calculator or the old ATMs and so on, you know, the dot on the 5 was standard, and then you just moved your fingers around. They were all pretty much the same design, and somewhat smaller buttons and bigger buttons, but they were all the same configuration. It is not so with digital technology. And that is a huge problem. And again, it comes back to that standardization, we feel. And the interoperation. So, for example, with the new ATMs, some of them you can actually operate with your mobile. It's called this contactless and cardless transactions. But again, you have to know whether that ATM is an Android-based or an iOS-based ATM or FPOS. There is no correlation between the phone companies or the phone manufacturers and the ATM manufacturers and the POS manufacturers to make it all standard so that people can go to any device and use their ATM with any other personal device.
Just quickly before we finish off, are there other areas regarding technology that you're looking at the moment?
Oh, yes, we are. I mean, touchscreen technology in general, so home appliances is the obvious one with air conditioners and microwave ovens, you name it, that thing. And also at work, so the what's called ITC, the information technology, communication technology, sadly, there has been a decline of people employed in the public service. And we feel that one of the reasons is that the new ITC, the technology that's used in the workplaces, so your computers, your photocopy machines, anything like that, scanners and so on, all often have a touchscreen display, and they often do not have the accessibility features. So that's a big issue because it relates to employment. It's also in education with the some of the applications that are used, so mobile applications as well as computer applications that are not all accessible. And we had a case recently of a young student who was studying at TEF, could not finish his course because the TEF was teaching an application for accounting that was not accessible.
Yeah, okay. So just to finish with, are there ways that people can get involved with the activity of DGI, or is there a contact number or email address that people can write to or call?
Yeah, so they could just call info@digitalgap.org, which is the easiest to say, info@digitalgap.org. I'm happy to give my phone number, which is 02-9799-5388.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Giselle, for joining me on Soundabout. That's some really important work that you're doing there, and we look forward to working with you at Blind Citizens Australia into the future to progress what you're doing.
Thank you, Ricky.
You're listening to Soundabout. My name is Glenn Morrow. Here's a conversation I had with Adam Morris recently about the email lists that he runs.
Mailing lists are a great way for people who are blind or vision impaired to communicate with each other. So let's talk about the mailing lists that you run. Which ones do you run?
Okay, I run ATUG, which is Accessible Technology Users Group. That's basically to discuss any type of technology, whether it's the best type of washing machine to buy, or whether it's support for your screen reader, problems with websites, or anything like that. So that's the first list. People can subscribe to that list by sending an email to atug-subscribe@damorris.com.
What kind of traffic does the ATUG list have?
It can vary. Sometimes you can go for 4 or 5 days without a message, and then other days you might have 10 or 15 messages a day, just depending on what people are writing in on and whether someone answers their questions or, you know, how popular it all is.
Can you give us an idea of some recent topics that have come up? I mean, the idea of like an accessible washing machine does appeal because that's obviously, as we move towards devices and machinery that have screens that may be not accessible to people who have vision impairments, those kinds of topics could be very useful.
Well, a little while ago there was talk about washing machines. People have written in about accessible speakers for using with your mobile phones and stereo devices around the house. So that was one thing, you know, Bluetooth speakers. Mm-hmm. And some of them are accessible and some of them aren't accessible and aren't easy to set up. You need sighted assistance for them. Now, sometimes people will write in and say, you know, I'm having trouble accessing a particular website. and someone will write back and, you know, give an idea how to do that. So basically any topic to do with the technology that blind or people who have low vision can use. So it's any type of technology, because with the washing machines, it could be apps that you could use with them, or, you know, maybe putting labels on different buttons, or learning how many presses of a menu to do, you know, to get to certain things, different things like that. So that's sort of where the technology part comes into it.
All right. So what about some other lists that you run?
Okay. I run a list for anything to do with Apple products, basically any of the Apple products that have speech on them. It used to be just for iPhones, but then people said they wanted it for any sort of Apple devices. And that list is a much lower traffic than the ATUG list, but you know, sometimes you can have, you know, some messages on there, you know, 5 or 6 messages, but then you may not see anything on there for 2 or 3 weeks. So, you know, it is a bit, the traffic is lower on that list.
Okay. Can you give us an idea of some recent topics that have come up on that list?
Yeah, people have been talking about accessible pedometers for iPhones. People do put things up there for sale. Someone put up an Apple Watch, an old Apple Watch yesterday that they were selling, and they sold that fairly quickly. So anything to do with any sort of Apple products can go on there, whether it's Mac, whether it's iPhone, the watch, the TV. You know, you might talk about different bugs that are happening. And so the address for that is ozapple-subscribe@damorris.com.
What other lists are you running?
There's another one that I run for people who have any of the ID Mate range of products through either if they've bought them themselves or got them through the Lions Club. But I'll just mention the ID Mate list is idmate-subscribe@damorris.com. The one for the Apple betas, for those who are running the public betas, is apple-beta-subscribe@damorris.com.
So what got you into running the mailing lists?
Basically, I found that some of the lists in the States for the iPhone and Apple products had a lot of heavy traffic, maybe 200 or 300 messages a day. And a lot of the time people were talking about apps that we can't get over here in Australia. So I thought I'll set up a list that people in Australia and New Zealand can access, you know, with more relevant apps to our country.
That's actually a really good point. It's about availability, but also it can be about things that are just more relevant to our local environment. For example, GPS apps that might work better in Australia than perhaps in other countries.
That's right.
So thank you very much for chatting to us.
You're welcome, Glenn, and thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Hi, this is Ricky Chaplin for Soundabout. Well, in Australia, as we know, football is regarded by many, many people as the greatest game of all. But it's not so great if you can't access it in the way that you'd like to. So to talk about this issue now, particularly in regard to the ARL and NFL apps that Telstra has developed, I'm speaking now with Martin Stewart. Martin, welcome to Soundabout.
Hi, Ricky and members.
Martin, great to have you on Soundabout, and maybe we could go back a little bit, because this issue has been around for a few years now, particularly since the development of these apps, and maybe you could just give us a bit of a sense of what it's like for you being in this position where you can't access the live stream so that you can listen to the football on your iPhone as you'd like to do.
Well, it isolates us. It is a feeling of not being included. Your friends and others around you are able to access, and they're telling you the score. You can possibly at times hear the slight tones of the commentary on their phones, and you can't get it on yours. And there are times where it's the only accessible tool we have. It's the only item we have close to us is our phone. It's very much a part of our lives these days. And when that, what should be inclusive tool, is prevented from operating effectively and accessibility on a particular app, it can be a very major frustration, particularly, Ricky, when it comes to the greatest games of all. Yes. I said games, plural. We won't debate which football type is the best or not so good, but there's many millions of Australians who enjoy it, and many, many thousands of those are blind and vision impaired, and we should have equal access to this app.
Now, I've worked on this issue, which was brought to my attention by quite a few different people a couple of years ago, and I made a little bit of progress, I have to say, as advocacy and policy officer, but not nearly as much as I would have liked. And so you, Martin, and I'm very grateful that you did this, you've decided to step in and you've taken the matter into your own hands, which again is fantastic. And you've contacted Telstra yourself and taken advantage of the contact person that I gave you, and you've managed to progress the issue somewhat. So how did you go about that?
Well, this is an example of where we should not sit back and let an organisation only, who needs to take an organisational approach, deal with the issue on its own. There are some times where it's actually better to come from the grassroots, from the people who are primarily affected, and that's what's happening here. Thanks to you, Ricky, we had the contacts which you provided, and you have been of great help, and that's where the linkage can occur between our organisation and ourselves, individually or collective, straight from the grassroots, from the user's perspective. So I've got a group together to basically, unofficially, but definitely effectively, represent our community to be involved in a process which has just begun, but very definitely moving towards an outcome with a team spirit approach, having the app developers on side and the organisations who contract them on side. And of course that's Telstra, NRL and AFL.
Yeah, and of course one of the accessibility issues with this app is that it's so inaccessible that we don't actually know what works and what doesn't in the app.
It's like a home that is very old, tired and run down, and someone says, what's the problem? And you just simply say, just about everything. So please, let's not start there. Let's just say we'll go right through the whole thing from top to bottom, from door to door, and we will eventually get there. But it needs to be methodical. It needs to be a procedural issue. But at the same time, there is some important things, just like locks on doors are, where you need to feel safe and secure. We have pointed out some mainstream things, and I use the word stream quite deliberately because we think access to streaming at the moment is very evident as a major issue, but that's just where it begins. But if we can at least access the streams, we can enjoy some major aspects, and then we can get on with fixing the rest of the app.
Exactly. Now, we had a meeting with Telstra on April the 5th. Would you like to run through how that meeting went and the outcomes that we've got thus far?
I feel that there was a very positive feeling, and of course, that means nothing unless there's positive results. We've agreed upon a generalised process of engagement, of future follow-up meetings, and we've outlined the dynamic nature of the problem and the various, without pointing out every issue, because as I said, there's too many of them, but the various functionality problems that exist. What we've done also, we've made sure that people with low vision, people who are totally blind, and people with various abilities are being represented in our response and representation. This has come from the grassroots. It's very important to understand that we haven't just said, oh, BCA executive or BCA advocates, it's over to you, please help us. we've said we're going to help ourselves, but link in with people such as yourself, Ricky, who attended this meeting, to assist the process. Basically, what happened at the meeting is there was an outline of the vast issues involved, the problems we're encountering, and the total shutout, virtually, that has occurred as a result of all these problems. So they are now aware that this is a comprehensive issue for them. They are also aware that they need to have a cultural change in order to prevent this from happening again. And they are also aware that what they have done so far has not been successful, so they need to do it differently. So there's definitely been an awareness created, and we have indicated follow-ups must occur, not should, not might, not maybe, but must occur, and there's been a process established for that. So we are confident with the feedback that we had come to us that the will is, if not established yet, there's a clear intention to establish it, and there's a clear intention to placate our community and to eventually, over time, create an accessible sporting app future.
Yes, and you mentioned the live streams earlier, and of course one of the outcomes of that meeting was that they would work on the live streams as soon as they possibly could. So that's great news for our Blind and Vision Impaired community. All right, Martin. Well, yeah, thank you very much for joining me on Soundabout. And it's great to see people getting involved because they're passionate about a particular issue. And, of course, we always support that at head office. And we look forward to working with you further on this issue with Telstra and its IRL and NFL apps. And hopefully we'll see some progress soon.
Yes, and I hope that this will also impress upon all our members that you can do it too, that it's not just about waiting for our organisation to precipitate actions, that you can help yourself and help our community by participating in this type of activity, proactivity. I really highlight that. And I think that, Ricky, you could probably do it with a hand in that way too. It's a massive process, all these developments and what needs to be done. And if we can help each other to help you and help our organisation, I think that's a really good outcome for all.
Yes, and certainly, as you said, the passion that comes from people who are involved in these processes, trying to use these apps or whatever the case may be, the people that are directly concerned, that's what makes people sit up and listen in positions of influence. So, yeah, again, Martin, I do really thank you for your involvement in trying to get this issue resolved. So thanks very much for joining me on Soundabout.
Thank you very much.
Now on Soundabout, here are the diary dates for May until July. For BCWA, the Social Sundowner is on Friday the 19th of May at 4:30 at My Place Bar, 70 Pierce Street in Perth. BCWA General Meeting is on Saturday the 27th of May at 1 p.m. at Gosnells Hotel. BCWA's State Forum is on at Mandurah on Saturday the 17th of June. Swish dates for Blind Citizens Australia WA. Swish is played at St Luke's Church Hall on the corner of Rowlands and George Street in Maylands from 1 until 5 p.m. Switch is coming up on Saturday the 13th of May, the 10th of June and the 8th of July. For New South Wales and the ACT on Wednesday the 10th of May from 10 a.m. until 12 p.m. is the Central West Branch meeting. It's on at the Mudgee Employment Service, 5 Town Hall Arcade in Mudgee. Morning tea is available and all welcome. For more information, contact Graham Hedrick on 0458 810 594. On Monday the 15th of May from 10 a.m. is the Maclay Nambucca Branch Social Get Together. For further details or to arrange transport, support, please contact President Patricia Quirk on 02 6568 6538. That's 02 6568 6538. Saturday the 20th of May at 12:15pm is the Newcastle branch meeting. It's on at the Sydney Junction Hotel in Beaumont Street, Hamilton. For further details, please contact President Stephen Belbin, phone 0409 00 100. That's 0409 00 100. On Tuesday the 30th of May from 10:30am, there's a branch meeting at the South Tweed Sports Club. For further details, please contact President Suzanne Hudson on 0431 399 845. That's 0431 399 845. For June, on Wednesday the 14th of June, from 10am until 12pm is the Central West branch meeting. Saturday the 17th from 12:15pm is the Newcastle branch meeting. Monday the 19th from 10am is the Maclean-Nambucca branch social outing. Tuesday the 27th from 10:30am, the Tweed Valley branch meeting. For July, on Wednesday the 12th at 10am until 12pm, the Central West branch meeting, all welcome. Saturday the 15th at 12:15pm is the Newcastle branch meeting, again all welcome. Monday the 17th at 10am is the Maclean-Nambucca branch meeting. And Tuesday the 25th at 10am is the Tweed Valley monthly branch meeting. For details of ACT branch activities, please contact President Vicky Sheeran on email Vicky, Sheeran, at southernphone.com.au. In Queensland, for details of Brisbane branch activities, please contact President Lynn Eagers by email at bca.brisbane@live.com.au. For details of Toowoomba branch activities, please contact President Joyce Jones on 07 4632 6019, that's 07 4632 6019, or by email at joycejones@bigpond.com. In South Australia, for details of Adelaide branch activities, please contact President David Squirrel on 0418 810 030. That's 0418 810 030, or by email at squirrel@healthon-news.com. That's squirrel, S-Q-U-I-R-R-E-L, at healthon-news.com. In Victoria, for details of Geelong branch activities, please contact President Bob Curry on 0400 610 283. That's 0400 610 283. Or by email at bc925693@bigpond.net.au. That's bc925693@bigpond.net.au. In Western Australia, for details of Blind Citizens WA activities, please phone 0419 918 264. That's 0419 918 264. Or by email bcwa@westnet.com.au. That's bcwa@westnet.com.au. For details of the National Women's Branch activities, please contact President Janine Sidhu on 03 9853 1051. That's 03 9853 1051. Or by email at nwb@bca.org.au. That's nwb@bca.org.au. Well, that's it for this edition of Soundabout. My thanks go to all those who've been involved. Special thanks to Michael Kelly of MacTrack Audio for production. If you have any suggestions regarding the future content of Soundabout, or you would like to get involved in its production, please contact Ricky Chaplin at rikki.chaplin, C-H-A-P-L-I-N, at bca.org.au. Or phone the Blind Citizens Australia office on 03 9654 1400, or toll free 1-800-033-660. The Blind Citizens Australia head office is at Ross House, level 3, 247 to 251 Flinders Lane, Melbourne, Victoria 3000. Bye for now, and we'll catch up with you again on the next edition of Soundabout.